Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye, live with The Fed. Did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. All right, everybody, from Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, this is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Excuse me. Today's date is Saturday, December. I even typed November here. Guys, if you've been listening to the show lately, you know I just haven't been able to get September down right. I actually wrote this script today and I typed November. How do you like that? My goodness, my brain is stuck on November for some reason. Anyways, it is December the 15th, 2018, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and a good late afternoon to early evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones, and of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. It is a rather dreary, chilly day here in Riyadh, as we have had overcast skies throughout the day. Really, the entire day, even up into like 3, 4 yesterday morning, actually started, I think, about probably 8 o'clock yesterday evening. But yeah, we've had some overcast skies, just light showers coming in, drizzles, drizzling all day for the most part. We have had basically all of the, you know, the ground's been wet all day because it's just been drizzling and not heavy rain, just really light rain throughout the day. It's going to expected to continue for maybe a couple more hours before it starts to clear going into tomorrow. But today, just really dreary. We never got too high. I think the temperatures only hit up to about 68 degrees today. We're currently sitting around 65 degrees at just about an hour past sundown. Now, winds have been around 7 miles per hour out of the east northeast, and this evening again should remain partly cloudy, and that will keep the evening lows actually quite warm, hitting only 56 degrees in the hour before sunrise. Now, with winter but a week away now, daytime highs and lows are expected to drop measurably over the next week to two as the 70-degree highs go from constant to occasional and evening lows begin dipping down into the 40s. But for now, we have what is really a wonderfully dreary day, which will be staying with us again into the evening before clearing before tomorrow. Now, if you have been listening to Inside the Eye Live Primetime, you've already heard this news, but if you haven't been listening to Inside the Eye Live Primetime on Thursdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, yours truly, I had some surgery done on my eye this week. I went in on Wednesday. I had basically got approval from everybody to go get things done and then get out of here and recuperate and recover, rest, recover, and recuperate or something like that. Rest, relaxation, and recuperation. I think that sounds good. The triple R's. So anyways, I went and did the surgery Wednesday. Wednesday happened to be the day that was the Theresa May, the Prime Minister of Britain, her no confidence vote. And I was stuck inside of a hospital room watching television after the surgery and nothing but CNN and BBC to watch. And I'll tell you what, CNN is an absolutely atrocious network. I just couldn't stand to watch it. And the BBC proved to be much better only because it was that day. But it's funny, the BBC never ever brought up immigration. You know, the whole day I was like waiting to listen for, I was waiting to hear them talk about immigration as part of the Brexit struggle. And not once was immigration actually brought up. I never saw it one time. I never heard it one time in about 7 hours of watching BBC on Wednesday. They talked about all kinds of things, but they never talked about immigration. They never talked about why Brexit was even put into play. And that's because immigration has become such a problem for we in the West. And we got a little bit more on that a little bit later. First thing we want to do, though, is actually, let me just finish the story on Wednesday. So basically, they took the oil out of my eye, everybody. I've been struggling here. I'm not struggling, but I'm kind of struggling with a not torn, but a detached retina. And that got repaired back in May, and I've been basically had an eye full of silicone oil for the past, I don't know, 6 months, right? Almost 7 months. And so I finally got the surgery done. They took that out. They have they actually found a cataract, so they actually replaced the lens. I wasn't too keen on that one, actually. So now I'm just waiting for the eye to clear, and there's now gas inside the eye, some pressure inside the eye. So I have this like floating circle inside of my eye that's actually transparent. I can see through it. So when I look down just a little bit, I see this round bubble. It's actually a gas bubble inside my eye. It's very, very annoying. So as I'm reading the script, if you guys can imagine this, there's like a bubble that takes about, I don't know, maybe a fifth of your eye. And it's just bouncing back and forth inside the eye while you're trying to read the script. That's what I'm putting up with right now, just to try to get this thing done. So I've like increased everything up to like 18 point, you know, it's like, okay, I can read that one now. But it's kind of annoying, but we're going to get through the day. We got a great day lined up because we got a guest coming on that has been requested for quite some time. And that is a gentleman by the name of Tan Stoffel. He has a website called Age of Treason, and he deals with language. He deals with the Jewish question, the Jewish problem, and a lot of other contemporary topics that are very well within what we do here on Inside the Eye Live. He's been requested for years and years and years, quite frankly. And we've never honestly reached out to him. And we finally reached out to him three, 4 weeks ago, and we were able to put that together, and he has agreed to come on in the 12 o'clock hour today. So that's going to be kind of fun. And then for next week, we already have Jan Lamprecht from History Reviewed. He's going to come on next Saturday for the 11 o'clock hour, and we may actually fill that up because it's the holiday, December the 20th. A second, the winter solstice, all that kind of cool stuff. So we're going to try to make it light as we go into the year, as we usually do. And we'll try to have something special lined up for the 29th, which would then be just before the, the new year. So we're looking forward to having that. Now, if you want, join us in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Right now, it's actually fairly quiet. I can't find my mouse. There's my mouse. It's fairly quiet. Not a whole lot going on there, but we have, it looks like, Digital Soldier. That's a new name. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live. Haven't seen you before, so welcome. Jim Fire, of course, is there. Wolfgang are the only two I see, and myself, but there's a few people there in the chat room. Telephone lines are still going to be open. Again, it's 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. Now, we've been talking a lot over the past 6, 7, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, maybe 3, 4 months, even 5 months. But really hitting home, I think, really starting back in probably July. I don't know when. I'd have to really go back. I do so many shows now. But I think it was around July, August, but certainly into September, we started to raise this issue about how Jews are using this idea called anti-Semitism to essentially declare war on the American people. And a lot of people probably haven't really taken me too seriously yet. They're probably thinking, no, this is just all a joke, Fetch, you know, you're just, you know, we like what you say, you know, here anyways, but you're not, you know, you're not really based in reality, whatever you might think. But I'm dead on. I'm not incorrect here. We have talked about certain Jewish groups out there have openly already declared war on the American people. They are saying that basically they will cause harm to you before you have a chance to cause harm to them. They have openly declared this type of warfare, violence on the American people. They talk about proportionality. Now, of course, you have to understand when you're dealing with a culture that is victimhood centered, you don't know what's going on inside their heads because they are perpetually victimizing themselves. So they're basically a paranoid, freaked out culture just by nature. Everything is a slight. Everything is an affront. But the real reality here is that Jews control our country. And they have controlled our country for many, many, many decades now, perhaps even up into a century now. We have had politicians talk about this in the past, all the way back in the 60s, the 70s, talking about how Jewish domination inside the Congress is absolutely oppressive. We have seen what they have done to people like Jim Trafficante. We've had someone like, the name escapes me, Cynthia McKinney. Come on this show even and talk about how she was actually asked to sign an oath of loyalty to the state of Israel. Now, to us Americans, all of this is treasonous. These types of things working on behalf of a foreign power, especially a power that has engaged in acts of war against the United States to include the USS Liberty, to include the barracks bombing in Beirut, to include what was done, the Lavon affair inside of Libya, and of course 9/11 is the great big elephant in the room here that everybody seems to know on our show, but Americans haven't quite seemed to grasp it yet for some reason, even though over 50-60% of Americans do not believe the Jewish concocted story that was created using Jewish media in what was known then and it's still today an act of mind war against the American people. So we have talked often about how Jews are going to be using this idea of fighting bigotry, fighting anti-Semitism for nothing more than to maintain dominance and control within our nation. And the American people, we have to be aware of this, quite frankly. We have to challenge it. We have to address it. We have to raise it because all of these are serious issues relative to the Republic of the United States. As nationalists, we should look at many in the Jewish community as being not American, but a fifth column element within the United States. And you might say, Fetch, you know, they've served in our military proudly and they've done all of these things and, oh, they're true Americans. Well, when I see them pull a gun and drop a bomb on Tel Aviv, I'll believe you. But every time I have asked Jewish members and former members of our armed services if they would be willing to go to war against Israel, the only answer I get is I'm an anti-Semite. And what that tells me is that they're not willing to actually fight for the United States of America. They will do so as a proxy Israeli army inside of our military, but they will not pull the trigger on their fellow treasonous Jewish people. So therefore, they're not trustworthy. We've had stories coming out now from people like David Gahari, from the USS Liberty, you know, I forget the name of his book. Sorry about that, David. Got to advertise here, man. Remembering the USS Liberty, or Remembering the Liberty, I believe it is. And we're hearing stories of Jewish doctors denying or seeking to even harm U.S. sailors who served on the USS Liberty. Now, these are very serious accusations and charges, but I would not doubt it for a second that Jewish doctors would be doing that. I don't trust, for the most part, Jewish doctors. And that they would engage themselves in this type of politicization of the field of medicine absolutely is something I would expect from a Jewish person. I have no faith or confidence in them. And now a story comes out. I knew about this story last week, but I didn't run it with it because it wasn't really verified yet and I was in a hurry coming off the surgery and all that. But now it looks like it's actually verified. There's an 18-year-old kid. He goes to a college. What's the college there? Where is he going? Oneonta College or something like that. But it's in New York. And what he did is he pasted a picture of Adolf Hitler, a swastika on it, bombed out, burned out buildings of Germany in the background. And he pasted them on areas of the Purchase College campus. Never heard of that campus. Now, Purchase College, the student's name is Gunnar Hassard. And he was actually arraigned in Harrison Town Court for aggravated harassment in the first degree. That's a felony. And the Westchester County District Attorney, Anthony A. Scarpino Jr., announced that bail has been set for $5,000 cash or bond, and his next court date is scheduled for January the 8th. Now, mind you, this is an 18-year-old kid. Now, the felony complaint alleges that the student hung multiple posters, which, again, incorporated a swastika and symbols of Nazi Germany. I don't know if you would consider bombed-out buildings to be symbols of Nazi Germany, because the swastika stands out on its own. And he hung it near the Humanities Building on Sunday during the Jewish celebration of Hanukkah. The posters carried a song line from a Mel Brooks film. Don't be stupid, be a smarty, come and join the Nazi party. And it was from the movie The Producers. And it was a 1967 satirical film. And then it was later turned into a stage musical. And it's about a washed-up Broadway producer who seeks to cheat investors with a dreadful play that will bomb. Too bad for him that the politically incorrect Springtime for Hitler, a gay romp with Adolf and Eva at Berchtesgaden, is a success, this thing reads. Of course, Jews and their homosexuality, their debauchery, their depravity, it's always in full display. The complaint here says that on this campus is frequented and utilized by members of the Jewish community. Then it goes on and says causing alarm, fear, and annoyance to the members of the campus community during the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah. Now, New York State University police arrested Hassard and charged him with aggravated harassment, which is in this area now considered a hate crime, which specifically states a person is guilty of this crime when one etches, paints, draws, or otherwise places a swastika, commonly exhibited as the emblem of Nazi Germany, on any building or other real property. Now, if that doesn't sound to you like the Jewish community has declared war on the American people, I don't know what to do to get to you. Because all of this is protected speech, folks. Whether you like it or not, the Nazi Party is a political party in the United States, and it is perfectly legal. You are absolutely in your right to go join the Nazi Party if you so choose. You are absolutely in your right to go join even more radical, extreme organizations that are associated with Israel. But it's only those that are centered on particular topics that Jews are declaring war on. But the reality is that Jews are declaring war on the entire way of life in America. First of all, if he wants to go put up signs that says, join, don't be a party, or how did it read? Don't be a, where was that movie? Don't be stupid, be a smarty, come and join the Nazi party. Now, why was it okay for Mel Brooks to use this to program and insult and assault all of us Americans back in the 60s and 70s? But now some kid who, my hat's off to him for actually knowing some Jewish quote-unquote comedy here, to pull that line, and now he's being charged with a hate crime by the Jewish community? To me, folks, this is a declaration of war by Jews against the American way of life. He has every right to do that, and you and I all know it. What's next? What is next, everybody? Because now this whole law is unconstitutional. Of course, it's not constitutional. All of this is protected speech. And if Jews are annoyed, go screw themselves. It's not our business. We can't control the fact that you guys are, quote unquote, annoyed. We can't control the fact that you constantly live in fear because you're a bunch of little whiny little losers who can't handle anything in life. Guys, I don't know about you as adults here, but I bet you you've heard a lot of nasty mean things said about you through your life. I'm sure you have. I'm sure you've heard a lot of nasty mean things said about your family members. Really, I'm sure you have. It's part of life. Now, do we start and say that you or I should be able to go and criminally charge everybody who disagrees with what happened to us in the past? Is this the America we want to live in, where everybody is so afraid of Jews, basically, that they say nothing? You know, I hear Jewish people all the time, and this annoys the heck out of me, because they spread a lot of actual disinformation about what happened, what is going on inside of Saudi Arabia. They actually lie to you. They don't even tell you the truth. I don't get too much into it because I don't want to get into the involved in the politics here in Saudi Arabia. But let me assure you, they lie through their teeth to you. This is an assault on your absolute being because it forces or causes you to do things that are actually not necessarily in your interest because you don't understand the full picture here. And Jews are making sure you don't even get it. Now, here in Saudi Arabia, though, one thing you do not do is you don't criticize the royal family. You don't do it. You want to get a ticket out of Saudi Arabia quickly? Go on to some rant that you actually are criticizing the royal family. It's one of the things they tell you not to do when you come here. Now, if you come to Saudi and you're afraid to, not that you're afraid, and we can say, I mean, I'm not, what I'm talking about is just going on to some overt rant here about the royal family here. I'm going to carry on with this because it's actually a very important issue. It's the Fetch. Good morning. It's Inside the Eye.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically. We're happy Saturday. Good Saturday morning. I see people are still showing up kind of in droves. That's a good thing. So thanks for coming in. You know, I really like doing the Saturday show. I don't know why. I actually like doing this show. My energy is pretty good. The audience is fantastic, quite frankly. And so I just like to do this Saturday show. And it's almost as if we own, in many respects, this time slot for the live type of show. Because we do know that a lot of people come to listen to this show on Saturday. And we got to thank you all for that. Really, we really do thank you for that, man. Because I look at the numbers here and I see them going up and up and up. And it's like, cool, because we had a pretty dead studio today when we started. It was pretty quiet. But thanks for showing up, everybody. And, of course, I'm sure you're going to keep coming as the day goes by. I hope you had a cup of coffee or some tea or a glass of wine or a beer or whatever the case is, no matter what your time of day is. For me, I actually had two of these little vanilla things. I don't know. They like made in Indonesia. It said energy drink, you know, vanilla, and you basically add hot water to it, and it's got a nice flavor. It's kind of like a cereal with vitamins, and it tastes like vanilla, and it's actually pretty darn delicious. So I had two of those to get the show going just to kind of pick up my energy because I only had like 3 hours of sleep last night. I had to get up early to help somebody because I do intend to leave very soon, right after tomorrow. Tomorrow I go to the doctor again. I'll get checked up, and hopefully I'll get clearance to travel. And then I'm going to head on over to Jordan, and we'll be doing the next show probably in Amman, Jordan. If so, we're going to actually do a live stream. I'll probably set up the live stream studio. I asked them to in Jordan to set the studio back up, set up the green screen, because they took that down when I left. So we may be doing a live stream YouTube this coming Thursday. So anyways, that'd be kind of fun. And just want to say, though, without you guys showing up here, let's be honest, everybody, that without you showing up here, we don't have a show, right? And so it's a synergistic thing. Without us, we probably wouldn't have you coming here. And without you coming here, we wouldn't be doing the show equally. So it's a win-win, we like to think, between you and us. So thanks again for all the support over the years. But equally, thank you for supporting. Let's see.
I can't quite read that in the chat room. My eye's not good enough. But anyways, guys, the main thing is we need a platform. Honestly, we've had a lot of you just show up, and we know that. You just came in over the last 15, 20 minutes. And I tell you what, if half of you, a quarter of you, were to just put in that $5 a month type of thing and help support the show, just for this show, it's like a dollar a week. It's not a whole lot of money. We would more than cover our bandwidth usage, which is one of the highest, if not the highest, of all the shows out there. I'm sure from time to time we get beat, but consistently this is one of the stronger shows here on the network. So again, without the platform, folks, we ain't got a way to work. So again, make your way over to revolution.radio. That's revolution.radio, and find ways to support the network. There's a lot of things you can buy, perhaps, or just make a $5 donation on behalf of the show, get the archives, whatever it is, just find some way to support the network. We want to say a thanks out to Jim Fire in the chat room. Jim Fire, I don't see you right now on the board, but Jim Fire is one of those that actually does take this to heart. He's part of the $5 a month club, and so we just got his donation again. So Jim Fire, thanks for that. It comes in as somebody a little bit more sexy than Jim, I know, probably, but Jim, thanks so much for that. And we appreciate that. This, of course, show is sponsored by the ITEL Cat Report. It's proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. It's independently located on the corner of Walk and Don't Walk, and by Blackburn Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Frederick C. Blackburn. Frederick is an NSA whistleblower, a 9/11 truth candidate, a former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can hear Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Spreaker Radio Network. And again, for more information, visit blackbird9sbreakfastclub.org. That's blackbird9breakfastclub.org. And the ITEL Cat Report is kind of like an extension again from Thursday's show. And we're just kind of following up with everything. We've actually had to kick a Spiker out of our house. Our cat was the new kitten that we had invited in, and it was all due to very bad bathroom habits. Bruiser just will refuse to accept this cat, so the cat never let us know it needed to go to the bathroom. It couldn't get to the back of the house, so it was basically messing up our house big time. So they have made a small house out front, and Spiker is officially kicked out. But I'll tell you what, One Eye's excited. I think One Eye knows I'm coming home pretty soon, because when I come home, one of the first things I do is I go and buy like a place called Crispy Chicken. It's just up the street from where I am. It's maybe a 5-minute walk up and a 5-minute walk down. And so I buy this Crispy Chicken, and I'll be honest, I don't even eat it. I give it all to One Eye. So I think One Eye is going to be very, very happy this week, because I'm going to go buy him some chicken. I just want to buy him some chicken. So he's going to just kind of like be smiling. But I've heard about One Eye, because of my eye last summer, I was told basically for a month and a half to just lay back. I had a really seriously detached retina last year, and that part has healed. Thank goodness it's healed. But what they told me to do is lean back, basically like in a semi-standing, but backwards, basically in a recliner. So I actually bought a recliner, and I've wanted one for years. I just could never afford it. But I finally broke down. I had a medical reason to do so. I bought the recliner, and One Eye has made that chair his own. And of course, it's got my scent all over it, and I know he and I are pretty good. So he's basically an interesting cat, because what happens is people come to the house and they will sit down in my chair. And of course, I'm not going to complain about that. It's a very comfortable chair, as many recliners are. This one's quite comfortable. And they will sit down, and he will look up at them, and he will talk at them. And from what I'm being told, the girls, typically it's girls at the house, will tell him, go away. And so what he does is he goes into the kitchen, which is just around the corner, and then he talks up a storm. He's not meowing, he's talking up a storm. Basically, this is so me, she won't get out of my chair. Da, da, da. And he just goes on and on and on and on and on until they finally have to ask the people, please get out of the chair because that's my cat's chair. And they just look at the girls like they're crazy. Like, what do you mean this chair is for the cat? And they're like, yeah, it's for the cat. And so they get up out of the chair and then they call One Eye. And One Eye's, he hears you. So he comes. He says, come on, yalla, yalla, let's go in Arabic. You know, One Eye, yalla, let's go. And so he comes out and then he looks up at the chair. He sees nobody's there. He hops in. And then he's quiet and he curls up and he just kind of casually relaxes there. And then they look at the people and they say, see, this chair belongs to One Eye. And so basically One Eye has a really expensive chair right now, but he's going to lose it this week. And I don't think he's going to mind too much. He's probably going to be happy to see me. But that's kind of the I Tell Cat report is for this week. Again, November, not November, see, I said it again, December the 15th, 2018. And again, it's proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. And again, you can hear Blackburn Nine's Breakfast Club, which is the parallel show, at blackburn9tradingpost.org. It's available from 8 to 10 p.m. Wednesday evenings on the Spreaker Radio Network. So go check that out. I know a lot of you do now. You've given Frederick a good shot and a good chance, and he's doing very well. So thanks all for supporting that show. And let's see here. It's about time for...
Oy vey! Oy gewalt! It's like another shower!
Oy vey!
Oy vey!
Oy vey, everybody!
Hollywood is run by Jews. It's owned by Jews. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on William Pierce.
Oy vey!
Oy vey, everybody!
The Oy vey moment is proudly sponsored by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, author of The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print. And after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored is now available from Barnes Review at barnesreview.org. Order your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at eurofolkradio.com. To listen, simply visit eurofolkradio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live Now link, or visit andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com for Andy's free show archives, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media.
And this week's Oy vey moment is going to come to us, I believe. Where do I want to go? I think I'm going to go first to the UK, because it's going to dovetail into where I'm going to go after the Oy vey moment, because I want to talk more about this story that's just come out of New York, where basically Jews are using a declaration of war against the American people. As far as I see it. Now, of course, you may not agree with me, but that's how I'm gonna frame this, because I think that's true. And the case here is, now there's a play that was written in the UK by a Jewish guy, and it was called One Jewish Boy. It was written by a guy named Stephen Loughton, directed by Sarah Meadows. And it was a play about anti-Semitism, of course, right? And it opened in London this past Tuesday. I think it's this past Tuesday. Let me see. No, it was actually, it's going back in time now. It opened a while ago, back in September. But I may have actually talked about this, but as this play has gotten steam and played out, what's happening here is that there's been a pushback. Obviously, it's been in your face. One Jewish Boy as a thing, we should view this, quite frankly, under the current political environment, as offensive, racist, anti-white hatred by the Jewish community. Now, of course, we're being hyperbolic here. You know, we're playing it up. But honestly, everything in the Jewish community is anti-Semitic nowadays. Let's be honest. If you look at them wrong, you're an anti-Semite. But in this case, Lautin, he went on to say, the writer of this, he says, I'm worried there'll be more anti-Semitism, and I'm worried it could become physical. Well, my point to people like a Mr. Lautin is when you create laws that essentially make it illegal to even talk about you, isn't jailing people physical? Isn't jailing people making a state form of violence against we the people? See, there's been lots of comments now. Essentially, it's like, you know, people saying we're tired of you Jews. And it's got to raise to a much higher level. Because at this stage, it's not loud enough. Because the arrogance in the Jewish community has gotten so oppressive that it's become stifling. All, not all, but a lot of the major global institutions out there are essentially backing a fight against what they call anti-Semitism. But when we look at the fight against quote-unquote anti-Semitism, it leaves absolutely no room for nationalism. So what it really is doing is creating a political environment where the nationalist aspirations of the people of this planet are being subjected to and oppressed by Jewish power within our own nations. Now, to Jewish people, this wave, as they call it, of nationalism, populism, and extremism is a danger. Well, have Jews ever thought for a second that their rise to power in every country that they have done so has been an absolute extremist danger to the populations that they lorded over? See, nobody wants to talk about this real key issue here. Judaism and its offshoot, the governments that come out of Judaism, because they do not separate their Talmud, their Torah, and their government, create some of the most totalitarian, bigoted, racist governments out that's ever been created. Now, the European Council, which again is non-elected, which controls a vast amount of territory by fiat because people follow it, I guess, this past Thursday, unanimously adopted a declaration on the fight against quote-unquote anti-Semitism and the development of a common security approach to better, again, protect Jewish communities and institutions. Well, what we see in this statement is essentially political domination by one minority group against the body politic itself. At some point, you have two choices. You either A, recognize you're in an existential battle against the Jewish community at large, and you respond in kind and you start to take everything they're doing very seriously because they are doing things very seriously. Or you just ignore it, put your head in the sand and pretend everything is okay until the day comes knocking when you said something you didn't know you even said and you find yourself in trouble. At the end of the day, though, let's be honest, there is no future in a Jewish world for the non-Jew. Now, speaking out, Chief Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt of the Conference of European Rabbis, they don't work, they're always in some type of group. He said, this declaration is a significant milestone and shows that Europe is united and wanting to fight anti-Semitism in all its forms. It is the many divisions in our society that have caused the rise of extreme politics and increased levels of anti-Semitism and racism. But the reality of their framing, folks, because they are droning on this message day in and day out and day in and day out, and it just never stops, is that they leave absolutely no room for political expression. They leave no room for the aspirations of the people. They leave no room for the nationalist tendencies of these nations within Europe and the United States at large. Now, the American Jewish Congress, it's none of their business, you would think, right? Because this is a European issue. They're chiming in. They're praising the vote as the first time the Council's 28 member states have passed a comprehensive measure aimed at mobilizing to counter anti-Semitism and to assure the safety of European Jews. Now, my point here is that why should we, the people, you know, really, why should we protect the safety of the Jewish people out there when it is obviously out in the open that they've declared war on the people of Europe themselves? Again, if you're going to bring in a hostile environment and that hostility turns against the Jewish people, well, who's the stupid idiot out there that brought it upon themselves? And why should we go out of our way to protect them when they are openly declaring war on the rest of Western civilization? Now, the Council's declaration here commits member states to adopt and implement a holistic strategy to prevent and fight all forms of anti-Semitism. Do you understand what's going on here, folks? These people, they will sit there. I'm going to just declare that the Oy Vey moment for now. And again, it was brought to you by The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, a new show every day of the year. And you can catch The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show every day, because it's every day of the year, right? At 10 o'clock a.m. on the Eurofolk Radio Network. And for more information, visit andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. Now, here's the thing I find about this, quote unquote, this anti-Semitism canard that they're throwing out there. We have all seen it within the United States, within Europe, that essentially any type of open disagreement, let alone political activity that might affect Jewish power, is met with an overwhelming, ruthless violence, whether it be instruments of state, instruments of technology, or instruments of social backlash, all of it caused or brought about by the Jewish people. This is not a joke. We see it all the time, folks. How many times have you seen people railroaded off of Twitter because of something they said? Is this a joke? That somehow Jewish people can talk all they want, but you can't? Because here's what's happening. When you look at the Middle East, and you look at places like Saudi Arabia, you know, the biggest thing you don't do is you don't criticize the royal family. You don't go after the royal family. It's not your business, right? Now, let me ask you, seriously, how are Jews any different than the royal family here? What, are Jews so elevated now in our society that they're basically like the royal family of Saudi Arabia, and we treat them with the same type of fear that is brought here inside of Saudi Arabia? Is that the type of society that we want to be existing within, where Jews are basically the royal family of our countries, and you cannot say a thing about them? Because everything, folks, is anti-Semitic to these people. Everything is racist to these people. Everything other than bow down to these people, because they are, what, our royal family? They're an extended royal family to us beyond any criticism, any measure of vocal opposition. Everywhere we look, everywhere nowadays, they're doing a full court press. Governors are signing anti-Semitic stuff. States are signing anti-Semitic stuff. Cities are signing anti-Semitism. You've got this case in New York where a kid is being jailed on a felon charge for just handing out a flyer that had a satirical line from a Jewish film back in 1967 that, for, bless him, man, I wouldn't even know that even line even existed. That's how little I care about Jewish people. I wouldn't watch these types of movies. But somehow he brings out this line and he's being jailed in our own country. And everybody thinks this is okay. That literally the Jewish family in America is the royal family beyond any criticism. Because that's what's happening. And you know what? If there was ever a need for an Arab Spring, you don't think there's a need for a European Spring? And you don't think there's a need for an American Spring? Because the same conditions under which you could claim were going on inside of Egypt and Tunisia, not so much Syria, although they created the Syrian idea, but all throughout wherever we see this autocracy, you don't think it's not happening in America? When you can't even speak up, you can't even put a flyer because some little Jew whiner loser is going to complain and the police are arresting you on hate speech for something that is absolutely protected and is part of our social structure for hundreds, if not nearly 1,000 years going back to the Magna Carta. We have, as Houston would say, a problem. Because the amount of oppressiveness coming from the Jewish community now can only be viewed in one light, as far as I can see. And that's an open declaration of war against the American way of life. Literally, it could be said that Jews hate us for our freedoms. It was always that. And now you know who's behind 9/11 too. It's the faith inside the Eye intelligent media. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Let's see if I can get this right. Today's date's December the 15th, 2018. Did I do that right? It's really bizarre, everybody, as I look down at the microphone. You know, I'm kind of like, you know, a little angle down to the microphone. This black round dot that's floating in my eye almost blends in with the microphone. It's like I'm talking to my eye. Really a bizarre feeling right now, for sure. But again, it's nice to be done, you know, with the surgeries now. It's theoretically just a matter of now recovery. And hopefully within another 30 days or so, everything's going to clear up. And I should be actually be able to read again with my right eye, which I honestly haven't been able to do now for, my goodness, a long time. Probably a year and a half, a year, 9 months, something like that. So hopefully things are going to clear. Just want to remind everybody, Tan Stoffel is again going to join us in hour number three. He's got a website out there, Age of Treason. And you can visit his site at age-of-treason.com. And again, he's been speaking a lot about many of the same things we speak about here. And he gets involved in some of the language things. Equally, he deals with things of nationalism himself. And so we're looking forward to having Tan Stoffel come on the line. I know he's already advertised it out to his people. He's already checked in. So we are definitely expecting to be able to bring in Tan right after the bottom of this hour, or not at the top of the next hour. So you'll definitely want to stay tuned for that. Let's see. We talked about the story out of New York. You know, this poor kid, not poor, you know, he has a right to do what he did, but he's been now charged with a felony hate crime for basically posting a flyer. And again, if you think that we should be standing by while essentially our police are literally turning the Jewish people into the royal family of Saudi Arabia to where you cannot criticize or talk about them in any form or fashion. Well, again, I think that quite frankly, over the long haul, Americans should absolutely not tolerate this. And in fact, Jewish people, if they're smart, should stop tolerating this. But I don't see them as ever being smart. They will push and they will push. You have to understand, guys, this with relative to this case in New York, again, they don't ever stop. Once they get this precedent, they go to the next precedent. Once they get the next precedent, and none of this is legal. All of it's unconstitutional, which means it's illegal. But they don't care. See, because in the Jewish way of thinking is that we can do whatever we want until you actually stop us. And if that means that we want to destroy you, well, hey, you let us do it. And if you were stopped because, well, we called you an anti-Semite and you were stupid enough to just drop everything, well, what do you want us to do? Because this is who we are. We're snakes. They won't say that part, but they're telling you, Drake. They'll say, Fetch, what do you want, man? I talked to Jews a long time, so many times in the past. They'll tell them, Fetch, what do you want? You know, you people are stupid. You let us get away with everything. And yet everyone's afraid of being called an anti-Semite. And they're like going, these idiots, man. They're so stupid, they're afraid of being called an anti-Semite that they'll drop everything. But they know, of course, that they punish people who challenge them. Well, then the day must come, quite frankly, where, you know, I don't know what to say, man. It's an existential war. That's just the reality of it. There's another kind of battle going on. Of course, part of that is controlling the borders. Part of that is controlling your finances. And all of these are all very, very important. And therefore, what you really have to do is start rolling back the cartels. The cartels are often Jewish-run, Jewish-dominated. One of these cartels is something known as Obamacare, and it has been struck down as being unconstitutional. In a 55-page opinion, U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor ruled that the last year's tax cut bill knocked the constitutional foundation from under Obamacare by eliminating a penalty for not having coverage. The rest of the law cannot be separated from that provision and is therefore invalid. So today's misguided ruling will not deter us. Our coalition will continue to fight in court for the health and well-being of all Americans, said California General Attorney, or no, Attorney General Javier Becerra. He's not even American, who is leading a coalition of states defending the Affordable Care Act. He's basically an immigrant, folks. He's going to basically say, gimme. The White House applauded O'Connor's ruling, but said the law remains in place while appeals proceed. And President Donald Trump tweeted that Congress should pass a new law. As I predicted all along, he says, Obamacare has been struck down as an unconstitutional disaster. Now Congress must pass a strong law that provides great health care and protects pre-existing conditions. Now, when we talk about stronger health care, there's a story coming out of, I think, Arizona, New Mexico. I'm not sure exactly where. Let me see if I can find this story. I have it open. Just got to find it. Yeah, here it is. It's coming out of California. Where else? California, right? But it's actually based on the government. Well, first, let me get to this thing. Let me kind of play this little clip here because it kind of dovetails into what we're doing here on this next segment. So where is that clip? Yeah, this is Donald Trump talking yesterday in the White House about saying he will own the government shutdown. Let's see if I can peg that correctly. And it might help if you unmute it. That'll work. That should work.
I could have debated Chuck Schumer for a long period of time because he was saying, it's yours, it's your idea. And then finally I said, "What? I don't mind. I don't know. What do you think? What do you guys think? I don't mind having the issue of border security on my side. If we have to close down the country over border security, I actually like that in terms of an issue, but I don't want it to be an issue. I want it to be something that the country needs. It's not really an issue. It's something the country needs. It's common sense. The country needs it. We need protection. We need border security. We need security from drugs that are pouring into our country. They're coming in right through that southern border, and we need a wall. We need border security, and part of border security is a wall. So I don't mind owning that issue. I mean, Chuck's problem is that, you know, when we last closed down, that was his idea. And honestly, he got killed. And so he doesn't want to own it. And I said, you know what? Rather than us debating who's owning it, I'll take it. If we close down the country, I will take it because we're closing it down for border security. And I think I win that every single time. Okay? Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
See, and border security remains the key thing because right now what we have is a situation where diversity is the strength of Jewish political power. It is how Jews dominate and control. And the whole idea of flooding Western Europe is actually quite sinister, and it's already well known. It's part of the Kalergi plan. It's all about breeding out Europeans, literally. Destroying Western civilization. This isn't even debatable anymore. And it is brought to you courtesy of the Jewish people. And they've openly declared this war on everybody. It's not like this isn't known, folks. It's already known. It's out there. We just kind of bring it up once a week. But it's there. Now, the idea of shutting down the government, first, border security. Absolutely. The drugs go what? They feed the black world. The black world is what? CIA. The CIA is what? The deep state. It's all there. So without shutting down the border, without, of course, Trump, get your troops out of Afghanistan. Let the Taliban clean up the poppy fields. Why are you allowing this to go on and on and on and on? And why are you in Syria? Get your troops out of Syria. You're creating an absolute humanitarian disaster for what? A rogue, shitty little place like Israel? Really? Seriously, I saw a nice video coming out of Lebanon. And it showed like about 22 Lebanese soldiers on the border within visual contact of the extremists known as the Israeli state. So you have these extremist Israelis. And this is extreme, everybody. They're out there with their rifles and they're going around with their rifles back and forth. And they got deep trenching machines, you know, they're digging, looking for tunnels coming underneath the border. Oh, we've already found two. Yeah, sure you have. And so they're, and then the Lebanese are sitting there, they're drinking tea and they're saying, look, I said, they're actually talking on television. Look, who's more at ease here? I said, look, we're sitting here. We don't even have our guns out. They're here, but we're not carrying our guns. We're relaxed. We're having tea with our friends. We're enjoying the evening. And look at them over there. They're carrying guns like they're going to battle. They're working night and day. I said, who? The Lebanese is saying, who are the problem here? Not us. We don't have a problem. We're living fine. Those people over there, everything to them is a state of war. I said, they're the problem in Israel. The Israelis, Jewish people, are the problem. Always have been. Always will be, quite frankly. But that's one of the issues now. Another issue was this idea of securing the border. Besides the Israeli issue, securing the border, Trump says, you know what? I need $5 billion. Okay, fine. Take it from the Israelis, Trump. Block any ability of Jewish groups to send money to Israel. Take it from the Israelis. They don't need it. They're rich. Oh, we're powerful. Oh, we're strong. We don't need anything. We're the greatest people on the planet. Now, what do we need? It's a shitty little country. But hey, when you got the U.S. to do all your hard work for you, yeah, you can be a tough guy. Yeah, you can be real tough then, and we already know they're the primary terrorists. So you take out Tel Aviv, you take out global terrorism probably overnight. That would, you know, that's probably closer to the truth than people realize. So it's really not hard to find the funding for the wall. Just take it from the Israelis. It's not that much. It's only $5 billion. Just take it from Israel. They don't need it. They're the most powerful, dominant, smartest people on the planet. And they can just call up their Rothschild buddies and say, hey, we need $5 billion more printed for us. Not a big deal. So why are we having to send it to them? Now, another issue, the border. It's gotten so bad, quite frankly, that even the Mexicans are shutting down their border. That's right. Mexico now is shutting down their border with Guatemala. So imagine, Mexico is so fed up with this garbage coming from the U.S. leftist side. They solved their problems in 5 days. Literally 5 days. Now, in a move that will likely shock pro-immigration activists, Mexico's new president, Andres Obrador, and his administration have agreed to close the border between Mexico and Guatemala, largely to prevent more migrant caravans from crossing into Mexico's southern states. Now, there was talk at one time of an invasion force coming to America of some 40 to 45,000 people. A Mexican Interior Ministry spokesperson told media that border security is no longer an issue. Do you know why it is no longer an issue? He said, because in 5 days, this administration solved the issue. 5 days. The United States, she said, was impressed. Yeah, because the Americans can't do anything. The Americans, you actually look at American governance, some of the most incompetent buffoons out there. By design, of course. In addition, the Mexican government is reportedly promoting a Christmas at home campaign. Look, you ain't getting to America. Not anytime soon. So why don't you take us up on the offer and we'll send you home. You can go home for Christmas. So that is already there. Now the government shutdown, as Trump's saying, look, I'll take it for border security. But there's other issues about the government that are absolutely critical to understand, and that is the use of mafias to impose onerous costs on the American people. One of these issues comes from, again, California. And then where did the story go? Quickly, there it is. There is a business out there selling non-prescription contact lenses. These are basically the decorative lenses that people like to put on their eyes. He was fined at one time as much as $600,000. That's right. $575,000 to be exact. $575,000 for selling non-prescription contact lenses without a prescription. Did you hear that? Now, why should we not shut down the government? Quite frankly, who needs a government like this? Because let's look at what's happening here. In America, there are certain medical cartels. One of those is prescription lenses. Now, if you go and get your prescription lens done, if you are having to wear prescription eye lenses as far as contact lenses, you don't have a whole lot of choice. You basically, because the prescriptions are almost product specific. So essentially, the doctors and the people who are doing the prescribing have a little cartel going, and therefore, or they're constantly just feeding each other the business. And guess what? That drives the cost up because we can't drive the cost down because it's all essentially brand specific. Now, if you want to go put on, let's say, something on your eye and it's decorative, it's part of a Halloween content, Halloween costume. Now, you would think that you would have some idea what you're doing. You're not just going to go out and stupidly do this type of thing. But what's happening here is that the government here is saying, the FDA is saying that contact lenses are essentially a medical thing because it's right next to your eye, and therefore you have to get a prescription for it. But how do you get a prescription for something that's not prescribable? So therefore, this guy sells it, and he gets fined $575,000. Now, the rule applies even to non-corrective lenses like the ones Duskin had been selling. This is the store owner, through a variety of online costume shops since at least 2014. Now, initially, that $575,000 fine was the largest ever held, but it was suspended and is now down to $60,000. Now, according to Bernstein, the FTC's Bureau of Consumer Protection, she's not protecting the consumer, everybody. She's protecting the criminal syndicate medical racket known as prescription lenses. She says strict rules are necessary because contact lenses are more intrusive than a pair of glasses. It's a medical device that's regulated by the FDA, and it's something that goes directly onto your eye. Well, you know what? Things go directly onto my feet, too, and I've had very bad feet from bad shoes. Are those going to be prescription shoes now? There's also getting these stupid gold things on your teeth. That's technically medical stuff. Where do we get the government involved in our private affairs for non-prescription, non-medical issues? For instance, again, these things that these people put on their teeth, that technically is a regulated medical device. But it also, of course, it's glued on, so you got your health risks. But you can get those without needing a prescription from a dentist. But why do you need it for the eye lenses? Because 40 million people in America use contact lenses. 40 million people are using contact lenses. So essentially, the whole contact prescription regimen in America is a criminal it's akin to a criminal medical syndicate. Bernstein, being a Jew, she is not there to protect the consumer. She's there to protect the criminal syndicate. And you get into this idea of reducing the cost of healthcare in America. Well, one of the first things you have to do is smash the cartel that is the medical industry itself. And if that means we lose jobs, well, guess what? You're importing a lot of those people anyways. We don't need them. You can send them back home, can't you? That's what they do in every other rational country that's not Jewish controlled. When your need for external labor expires, you send everybody home, just like me. I get sent home. I'm not kept here just to keep drawing. No. When things are done, Dennis, thank you very much, but get out of the country, man. Get out of here. Have a nice time. Hopefully we'll bring you back, that type of thing. So again, these are some of the issues when it comes to shutting down the government. Who cares? Shut it down. Put these people out, like Alyssa Bernstein, out of a job. Who needs her? Get rid of her. Cut her. We don't need all of these people in government, quite frankly. They had something like 400,000 federal employees are going to be around Christmas time without work. Well, right now, quite frankly, I don't care. I really don't care. They don't seem to care. They want to push nothing but, oh, well, if you don't agree to support Israel, you can't do business with us. Okay, if I can't do business with you, I don't need you in business either. If everything revolves around what's good for Jews, I don't need this business anymore. Every single institution that is working hand in hand with Jewish organizations to put Israel and Jewish interests first and foremost, we don't need them as institutions within government. They should be the first to be cut, and that should be done ruthlessly, especially without prejudice, quite frankly, to those at the senior level decision-making areas that were responsible for the harm to the American people. Any law that puts Jews above the rest of us is a harm to the American people. It should be viewed at as treason. This whole thing going on into New York right now with this kid that's being for doing absolutely something that's absolutely constitutionally protected. I'd like to know who was the chain that put this stupid law, unconstitutional, criminal. Guys, unconstitutional, it's akin to being criminal. When you are using it to violate the rights of the American people, it becomes criminal. What the Jews really want the American people to do right now? To fight back, to win back the rights that they fought for hundreds of years ago? Because that's where it's getting to. The violence being used by Jews through their government agents is creating the need to actually fight to win back rights that you're already supposed to have. Because Jews don't recognize your rights. They don't exist to Jewish people. All that exists is we are your royal family, and you will not criticize us. You will not speak ill against us. You will not oppose us. We are your royal family. Don't dare talk about us Jewish people, because we are the royal family of the West. We're one big happy family, and we will watch out for all of our members. How are Jewish people any different, quite frankly, from they want to go after the kingdom here, like the royal family here. They want to go after maybe the Communist Party or something in China. They want to go after all these people, but they're worse than everything they want to project upon. Haven't quite figured that one out. Actually, I have, but it's going to take time to just keep fleshing it out. Well, what else is kind of news? California's got to be one of the dumbest run states in the world right now. Now what they want to do, California, is they want to go back and they want to start taxing you for text messages. That's right. They want to tax you for your text messages. They are trying to raise more money. Basically, people don't use the phone as much anymore. No need, because we have, of course, the internet and other ways of communication. So now California, to raise money to basically pay for services that less fortunate people of our society, pay for basically the fact that, you know, maybe blind or handicapped or something. Well, they want to help there, but their budget, although it's increasing, it continues to decrease. The amount of money that used to go towards
these types of taxes was $16.5 billion. It's now down to $11.3 billion. And so basically that explains people simply don't make as many phone calls as they used to. That's kind of obvious. But now California has a solution. Let's start taxing text messages. And they are trying to do it in a way that would essentially create a $220 million windfall right out of the starting block. Now, probably this thing will not get through, but it just shows you the type of insane thinking that goes on inside of governments nowadays. No need not to shut them down, quite frankly. No reason not to shut them down. All right, join me in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. That will get you in the door. The telephone line's 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. If you'd like to call in, show Tan Stoffel coming up at the top of the hour. Back with more right after. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution.radio. That's right, Revolution.radio. And what is today again, guys? It's December the 15th. See, I got it right two times in a row. That's good for me, man. I'm going to pat myself. Ouch, might hurt my shoulder if I pat myself too hard. But I'm going to pat myself on the back for getting it all correct. I just want to remind you, we're going to have Tan Stoffel. He's going to be coming on top of the hour now. And I tell you what, going through his body of work, I can see why he's so so asked for over the years, you know. His body of work seems to kind of dovetail exactly what we do here on Inside the Eye Live. So it should be rather interesting to have Tan come on the show and just hear. We're probably just going to go all over the board, just have a nice conversation. I've never, ever talked with Tan. I don't have anything to do with Tan, actually, other than people say you should get him on the show sometime. So I'm looking forward to having him on. He seems quite lucid, quite intelligent, quite focused, quite to the point. So we're going to absolutely look forward to having Tan on. I don't see, in fact, he's just popped on here, but looking forward to having Tan come on the show. Anyways, let's see. Where do we want to go after all of this fun stuff here? I think we'll save some of that for some of that stuff for Don here. Let's see here. I got 808 Freedom Weeks calling in early today, huh? We can put 808 on. Why not? See if it connects. I think that connected. Hi, 808. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live Prime, not Prime Time. Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. How are you?
Yellow vest greetings, Fetch.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the yellow vest today. Probably get into that in the third hour, but yeah. I'll tell you what.
It's a reaction to state-sponsored violence used against the people and in defense of anti-Semitism.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm right on this one, 808. When I talk about what I've been doing for the last 4 months, you know, I'm right. I know what they're doing. I see what they're doing. I'm dead on. What the Jewish community is doing right now is trying to get a they can't get the guns, per se. You know what I mean? They can't get the guns. So what they're trying to do is create this pool. I don't know what you can call it, but this like oil.
Climate?
No, a climate would work too, but I'm looking at like this oil that suffocates all the life on the water so that nothing can live other than what is on top of it. And that would be the Jewish people. The rest of us are going to suffocate under this.
Like pond scum that forms in the algae overgrowths.
Something like that. Yeah, because what they're doing is they're creating across the board now. Literally, you've got hundreds of Jewish organizations right now. Hundreds, not even, that's, come on, hundreds, that are working to create these definitions of anti-Semitism. And with it, then use that to suffocate everything. What's happening in New York to this kid is unconscionable. I can't even believe any court would even take this. You know what I mean? I can't imagine an American court taking that because it would be thrown out. Even me, you know, when I was having problems with the FBI and other people for trying to expose the drug dealing, I was basically told, we don't like you. But, you know, what you're saying is free speech, and we're not going to go down that road. We respect it. And that was the FBI talking to me. And they didn't like me because I was making problems for them equally. They were making money, I'm sure, with the drug dealing equally in Los Angeles. Not that I know that for a fact.
But they said, look, we don't go down the road of silent. That was 20 years ago. Now,
a generation ago.
Yeah, a generation ago. Now it's like you put up a flyer with a satirical line from a Mel Brooks comedy film, and they're using that to throw you in prison. He's in prison because he's a kid. Right. He can't.
And Mel Brooks is Jewish, so that's even more irony.
Yeah, and the fact is, it's rumored that this kid's actually a drama. You know, he's in the drama major program, and that's probably why he knows about this. But it's believed he's actually in the drama program. So he's around all these Jews equally, and it's highly unlikely he's a, and even if he is, so what? But it's highly unlikely. The kid probably just is playing out some type of joke, or maybe he is a little bit serious about this, but I'll tell you what, he has every right, man. And if he says, come join the Nazi party is a legal party here in America. Who are the Jewish community now to outlaw people advocating for the Nazi party? Even if you don't like it, it's a legitimate party here. It's registered. It's legal. So to me, everybody should be putting, I'm serious, everybody with means should be going after the school, going after the police, going after the arresting officer, going after those who put this law into play. This should be a full court press, because this is now one of the first precedents like we saw up in Canada. With Arthur Topham, where essentially you satirically use something from Jewish people, and they're now throwing you in jail, but they never threw the Jewish person in jail.
Right. So deny the antecedent. It's crazy. Oh, you know, freedom of speech, you know, it can sometimes be a tough pill to swallow for the opposition. You know, they want freedom of speech for themselves, but not for anyone else. Freedom of speech only if you agree with me seems to be the
I see it as more sinister than that, though. Look at as a group strategy, to use a Kevin McDonald type of idea here, a group strategy to basically make Jews, and it's part of their Noahide laws, by the way, to make them literally beyond criticism, to where even the most intelligent of the goy cannot, for the life of him, be able to speak out against the dumbest of the Jew. Because all still animals in their way of thinking, and we don't have a right to talk.
Like, and straight jacket.
Well, it's beyond a straight jacket. They are creating literally the same situation now as communist China, communist Russia. You could even say here in the Middle East with the various royal families that run around, where you're not allowed to criticize them. Literally, you're not allowed. And right. Now they're creating. They're basically telling us they're the royal families. Well, what's the difference between the royal families in the Middle East or let's say communist Russia and the Jewish people today? Where's the difference now when you're throwing a 19 or 18-year-old kid in jail for putting up a poster? This is actually, I didn't run with it Thursday. I knew about the story, but I hadn't confirmed it yet. But apparently it's confirmed. I've actually read the affidavit from the court.
So wouldn't you say it's all just the erosion of national sovereignty? They won't let us protect our borders, our rights. They tax us into oblivion. And we've had enough. That's why you have the yellow vest reaction, which is spreading throughout Europe. So,
well, you do have the
yellow vest. And people are dying. People are dying for this cause.
Well, they're getting beat. I mean, the police are basically acting like essentially Israeli police.
Right.
Where they should, as this woman I saw very passionately said, the police should be part of the people. We are you.
Some of them were, right? In the past, they had police support or they would stand down.
They did. But it was just one good photo op. But it's not like the entire thing is. And you need the police, to say the least. You actually need the police.
Yeah. Well, so far, water cannons are being used. But there was one incident of tear gas being used against, check this out, Fetch, topless feminist activists. So they use tear gas against them.
We probably won't even care about those.
Yeah, so there's some splinter groups, I guess, or issues, or maybe they are in the main and they're, you know, protests to the government. It's going to affect everyone in France, so everyone should come.
Well, it was interesting that the Ministry of Interior came out with a statement saying, guys, can you please, basically begging, can you please, like, we can't tell you not to come out, but can you please, like, just enjoy the family, you know, before the holiday with your family.
Right. Settle down a bit. Have a truce. A holiday truce.
Yeah, holiday truce. Our guys have been deployed so much and we're so tired. So can you please just like calm down and not go out this. Literally, that was basically the tone of the message this week from the Interior Ministry of France.
Well, 'tis the season. So why not? We can make concessions and come back to it after the holidays. So, and I'm looking forward to your guests. So I'll hang up and wait for that.
Yeah, he's coming up quickly, right?
Yeah,
he's already checked in earlier today, so we're very confident that this will go down. Not that I ever worry about doing solo shows, but you know how it is.
Fantastic.
Nice to have people come on and share some information, so it'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Fetch, I'll holler at you next week. Thanks. Take care.
We're going to wake everybody out in Hawaii again. Telephone lines are still open if you'd like to get in real quick. 323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. Again, if you'd like to chime in, we got about 15 minutes before Tanstoffel comes in. Let's see. What else is going on? Russia. Russia's kind of an interesting story. They are building an absolutely huge compound for the Christian church there. And that hasn't been lost on the Ukrainians. So what they have now started to do is they're actually going to create their own church. They're going to create a separate church that is much more independent from Russia, because historically you had the Council of Orthodox Bishops in Kiev. We're kind of affiliated with the Russian Orthodox Church, but they've created a new Ukrainian church now that is independent of Russia. And President Petro Poroshenko has announced this today. That's right. That was effective today. So the announcement came after Ukrainian priests held a historic synod in Kiev's 11th century St. Sophia Cathedral to work towards establishing an Orthodox church, again, independent of Moscow. It happened, says Poroshenko. He also announced the council had chosen the head of the new church, 39-year-old Metropolitan Yepifani. I guess that's Metropolitan Yepifani, whose secular name is Sergei Dumenko. No word yet whether this guy is crypto-Jewish, although we should actually look into that. Ukrainian leader who has made an independent church a campaign pledge ahead of an unpredictable election next year told the bishops that the state did everything it could towards the creation of this new church. The people have been waiting for this. Our Ukrainian church should finally be independent from Moscow. A 65-year-old Mikhailo Kalepik, who traveled to Kiev from the southern Kherson region, told AFP. So congratulations to them, I guess. Why not? I'm not going to go after them for that, for sure. What I like the Russians to do, though, seriously, is I would like the Russians to separate themselves from the Soviet Union spiritually, mentally, intellectually, ideologically. I'd like to see the Russians do that because a lot of the problems we have in Western and Eastern Europe is partially owing to the fact that the Russians have not cut ties to their criminal Jewish past. And understandably, if you're not going to cut ties with your criminal Jewish past, people are just not going to trust you, because everybody understood the criminality of the Jewish Bolshevik state. So why Putin wants to be so far in bed with, again, the Chabad Lubavitch and pushing all of these narratives that support the criminal nature of the Jewish people as vis-a-vis the various Holocausts that were committed last century. I just don't see where Russia wins in spite of everything. You know what I mean? You can do a lot of great work out there, but if you don't cut ties with evil, you're still part of the evil. And, you know, we'd like to obviously appreciate all that's done for Western civilization by all the powers that be that are working for that. We appreciate it. We recognize it in some cases, for sure. But again, if we don't learn to cut ties with the Jewish criminal state, then we're still linked to it. The idea of that cyber this, cyber that. Look, if we cannot get some of our top people And that includes stealing intellectual property from the Israelis. If you have to, I don't care. They steal from us. I actually don't care. If you can do it in a way that's clever, I don't care. But why do we need to rely on Jewish people for anything? All they're going to do is give us a headache at the end of the day, and they cannot be trusted. That's just the real truth of what is happening out there. So, you know, we need to cut ties. We need to create our own cyber intelligence units. We need to divorce ourselves from the state of Israel. We need to absolutely, absolutely start clamping down on all of these criminal NGOs that are operating inside of the United States. Absolutely critical that we do these types of things, because now, heck, they're jailing you for just posting a flyer on a campus. And it's going to get worse. Seriously, it's going to get worse. They are looking for a total clampdown on speech. They want absolute dominant power, and they do not want anybody in America or the West to be able to oppose Jewish power here within our own lands. That is the reality of what is happening right now. Apparently Trump has decided he's going to launch something called the Urban Council. It's going to invest something like $100 billion in black communities. And I'll tell you what, we have spent so much money on those communities, and I can't see how this is going to deliver anything, but we'll have to see. At the end of the day, $100 billion is a lot of money, though. My goodness, that's a ton of money. What else is news as we kind of – really, I think, too, what's – I haven't even checked. It's Saturday, huh? But I haven't checked what's going on with the yellow vest today. I have no idea. Are they actually protesting? There's such a news blackout. It's almost impossible to get news here in Saudi Arabia, and you wouldn't think so with the internet, with the way the search engines – you know, you'd think that we should find anything. But I'll tell you what, here in Saudi Arabia, I can't find anything on the yellow vest. It's like impossible. Turkish President Erdogan, he's slamming those who invite people to street protests with the yellow vests. Well, dude, you know, you're one of the most totalitarian guys out there. I don't know why you're talking so much, quite frankly. South Africa. Oh, isn't that great? The South Africans are supporting the yellow vest. Yeah, like we care about South Africa, right? Let's see. Here's a story what 808 Free and Awake was talking about, and that was these basically topless women making a scene out of themselves. That I guess that made it. That's the big show of the day. See, go topless, ladies, and you get all the attention. What can I tell you? That's it. That's all I can see about the yellow vests is topless ladies going around protesting. So I'm not even sure really what's going on there. Yeah, no idea. So basically it's hard to find anything. I'll have to actually find stuff about the yellow vest after today, because there's just nothing on a quick dime to actually pull from. What else is news? I don't know what's happening with Jordan right now. I'm just looking forward to everybody getting back to Jordan. We really hope to, again, be broadcasting from Jordan later this week. If everything works fine, we're going to be doing that next week, I should say. We should be fine, and we should be in Jordan for the next couple weeks at least to essentially take care of the eye, try to get the eye back. I don't know if you heard the story we talked about the other day, a couple of weeks ago, where Merkel was supposed to go to Argentina for the G20, and her Airbus didn't work, basically. It was broken. They couldn't do it. So essentially what happened was they're going to now buy Ms. Merkel a new Airbus. Isn't that nice? She's going to get it's not a new plane. It should be old, man. Yeah, it says 12-15. She's not even the chancellor anymore. She's already given up everything. But they're going to buy they're going to buy some new A-40s for the German government, because basically their planes don't work anymore. They basically used all their money on immigration. They don't even have the ability. They don't have the ability to actually do the work that they used to do, simply because they don't have the wherewithal, the money, etc. to actually do a German type of job. They're just not that intelligent like before. Their quality is suffering as they deteriorate to a subpar nation when they, quite frankly, were one of the best and brightest in the world at one time. Though it's just too bad, quite frankly. What else is going on? The typical stuff coming out of Israel. I don't know if you're familiar with what the Israelis do, but keep it in mind. Keep it in mind as a strategy or as something to be aware of, because what the Jewish people do is they're very vindictive. So let's say they charge you with anti-Semitism and somebody within your family goes and harms a Jewish person. Well, in some cases, they actually will come and destroy your house. Because, you know, your uncle did something that the Jewish people don't like. This is common practice in Israel. It happens all the time. And there's a four-story building that was blown up by the IDF today because basically Jews invaded someplace. One of these Jews was killed. So they went into this district and they blew up a four-story building, and all the people that lived in it now are homeless because guess what? Because somebody lived in that building. So literally, this happens all the time, guys. This is the Jewish state that everybody seems to want to be so enamored in supporting. These guys are cowards. They go into houses, they break down all the walls. They go through the walls and go house to house to house by breaking all the walls inside the house. I've never really seen a people so cruel and so callous and so cowardly as I have the Israeli people. They are disgusting people, quite frankly. I cannot find enough words that would actually tell you what a loathsome type of people these people really are when you look at it. Such cruel, sinister people. It's hard to imagine. You know, a lot of people here in Jordan in the Middle East that understand me, they are, what they can't understand is why Americans don't understand what I say, because they get it. You know, we're living next door to it. They just say, Fetch, you're you're the only American we've ever met that actually speaks true. Why is it that so many Americans are afraid to speak open and true about the truth? I said, I don't know, man. I said, many Americans, I don't know. I don't know. They're just, maybe they're afraid. Maybe they're just brainwashed. I don't know. I said, I don't know. But if I know what's going on, I must speak open and I must speak clear about this criminal state called Israel and the people that are really a society of criminals that is the Jewish people. These people are largely a criminal syndicate nation in a very real way. What else is going on here? Well, we have Don Stoffel coming up at the top of the hour. He'll be on again coming up right after the breaks coming up. Join me in the chat room again, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. You can click on the live chat button. There's Rick. Made it through, everybody. It's the Fetch. Good morning. Good afternoon to those of you in the East Coast coming up. All right, everyone. Welcome back. Top of the hour. One more hour to go here. Thanks for joining us on this fine Saturday, dreary Saturday in Riyadh again. It's been kind of like drizzly and misting and raining, lightly all day. Kind of cool today, but we're looking forward to getting out of here, getting back to Amman, Jordan. Coming up in just a few more days, as soon as the doctor gives me a clearance to travel, I'm out of here. Our guest in this hour, everybody, long requested, finally got him to come. Actually, I just reached out to him, so it's not his fault. Dan Stoffel, he began Age of Treason in September of 2005, and he was writing first at ageoftreason.blogspot.com. Age of Treason Radio is an extension of this work into audio, which he began as part of the White Network in June of 2012. And since May 2014, both have been brought together here at his website, age-of-treason.com. And he says he's a, well, not he says, everybody knows this guy, even I know who he is, a pro-white perspective on Jewish influence and the tendency towards the treason it inspires. And without further ado, Tan, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Hiya, Dennis. Am I coming through okay?
Perfect. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Exactly.
Glad to be here with you.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at your website. You know, I've known about you for a long time, Tan, to be honest with you, because people have always requested. I see some of your work from time to time to time, but it looks like what you and I almost hear a very parallel history here, getting back started in the very earliest days of the internet back in 2005. Can you kind of real quick explain what it was like to be on the internet doing what you do in 2005?
Yeah, it was difficult. It was a wasteland. It was at least on the fringes. And what was the fringes has now become mainstream. So many of the people who are new to this don't realize just how out beyond the pale the opinions about race and Jews were back in 10, 15 years ago. And I've left every post. It's embarrassing, some of the early posts that I made, but I've left every one of my posts in place without modifying them, showing my progression as I became unhappy with what was going on and got involved in politics again, or at least political opinion, and expressing my opinion about it. I basically wrote an open diary of my progression.
Pretty fascinating, too. It was I was doing the same thing, 2005, 2006, you know, it was a wasteland. And I keep telling our audience, boy, if you just would have known the changes and seen it coming, we never believed it would come, did we? But we kept plugging away. You got into audio about the same time I did. Why did you get into the audio?
It was Carolyn Yeager. It was some of the podcasts I had been doing with other people, and Voice of Reason Network. I started to listen to Voice of Reason Network, started listening to Carolyn Yeager. I did a few interviews with Carolyn Yeager. And she wanted to leave Voice of Reason, and she knew that I had a technical background, so she convinced me to set up the technical pieces behind the scenes to record Skype conversations automatically and transcode them. These are things that now are kind of commodity items. Anybody can do it, but back then it was required a little bit of writing of code and to do the website and such. And since I was going to be supporting her in doing her show, I thought, well, I should do my own show as well. And she urged me to do that. And I, for the next 2 years or so, I did once a week, 30 minutes, which I thought was plenty. And it took me many hours of research for each of the shows, but it was a learning experience for myself to dig very deeply into the things that I've become interested in since I started blogging, which is race and white racial history. History in general, but specifically white racial history, history of Europe, and Jews and Jewing, and all aspects of that, and focusing more and more over the years, and especially lately in the last 3 or 4 years, on the intersection of those two things, and why are people so confused? Why are white people especially so confused about race, and why are they so confused about Jews and their Jewing? So that's what I've focused on mainly. And to the point where some people criticize me for being too focused on, too obsessively focused on Jews. That's one of the main criticisms that I've gotten over the years, is that I talk too much about Jews, or that I'm too, speak too harshly about Jews, or things like that.
But really, Tan, as I see it, and we posit it here on this show all the time, really us in Western civilization are in an existential battle now.
It is existential.
With this thing that Jews have put into place. And I see, going through some of your posts, and we'll just get your opinion on it, or your take on it, really, is we see a case now where the Jewish people, as an organized political infrastructure, are trying, and effectively, we should say, using this anti-Semitism canard to really stifle and impose a suffocating block on expression in the West. How do you view that?
I think that's right. I think the catchphrase is combating racism and anti-Semitism. That's how they sum it up. And that's what they've gotten everyone to all of their tools and the traitors that work for them, whether they consciously do it or not, to echo those that phrase in the same way that previously they had echoed diversity is our greatest strength or we're a nation of immigrants. Today, the catchphrase is we have to combat racism and anti-Semitism. And you have to understand what that means. It's racism is whatever white people do. White people just unconsciously doing what we do is called racism. That's what it amounts to. And anti-Semitism, of course, is any reaction to what Jews are doing, especially the harm that they're causing. And whether you're conscious of it or not, the Jews know what the Jews are up to. You know, a good example of that is when you criticize George Soros. And a lot of mainstream politicians thought it was fine to criticize George Soros, and they may not even be thinking of the fact that he's a Jew or that he's got this enormous Jewish network behind him. But the Jews know it, and the Jews, this is one of the recent developments, is they've decided that anybody who's criticizing George Soros is an anti-Semite. This is anti-Semitism, and they've started to circle the wagons around him and attack anybody who does that, even politicians who have previously been nothing but sycophantic toward the Jews and done whatever the Jews asked of them.
Now, we had a year ago, August, we had the Charlottesville anniversary, and we've seen some very draconian sentences handed down from that event. You put forward I didn't cover it much, but you put forward the idea that really Charlottesville demonstrated that right now in America, the white community does not have freedom of freedom of expression and congregation.
Yeah, it's as I call it. It's I refer to it as the anti-white, pro-Jew regime. That's what runs not just the United States. Some people call it Zog. It's not what only the idea and the people that control power in the United States. It's they control power in Europe and they control power in other places around the world. You know, basically, except for a handful of dissident states that are pariah states, according to this anti-white pro-Jew regime. And I thought the value of Charlottesville is that it basically flushed that out, that they, Jews as a group historically have used disguise and crypsis, lying about who they are, disguising themselves so that their crimes are not attached to Jews as a whole. And this is part of it. They still are doing this. They advance the idea that it's about equality. It's about diversity. They use all sorts of code words. It's about combating racism and anti-Semitism. But when you look at what those things actually mean, and that's what I try to get to the root of, is what do these things mean practically, in practice? And what the response to Charlottesville, whatever the people think about where it came from or who instigated it or what, the response of this Jude regime is to be explicitly anti-white. They got their conservative in chief, as I refer to Trump, to mouth the words that they wanted him to mouth, which is to condemn the white people who were trying to demonstrate, and to do it. And I thought this was an interesting part of it as well, that it was done in defense of Jews, that usually these two things are kept separate from each other. They'll condemn white nationalism, white supremacism, anybody being too white, you know, it's okay to be white, this things like that. And they'll criticize that, but they leave the Jewish origin of that out of it. And at other times, they'll wring their hands and oy vey about the rise of anti-Semitism. And as I say, they usually keep these two things apart from each other. But more and more frequently, and lately, especially since Charlottesville, especially since the synagogue shooter, these two things are being combined by the Jews themselves. They're being basically brought out into the open that the reason we have an anti-white regime, that the reason the banks and the corporations and the schools and the government are anti-white, is because these things are pro-Jewish, because they are serving the Jews.
And in this recent case I saw just this week, this 18-year-old kid basically put in up flyers, you know, with, I don't know if you heard that story. He put up flyers,
Yeah, it's in New York.
Yeah, New York. But they actually are just going after everybody now for just anything. This is such nonsense that 20 years ago, nobody would even dared try this type of thing in the courts.
Yeah, I find it interesting because I have focused over the past few years on shootings or, as I see them, reprisals against these this Jewish rulership and the harm that they're causing us. And yet now you don't even really have to shoot at anybody. You just have to say something negative about Jews or just joke about them, ridicule them. As you pointed out earlier, the last hour, it's really, you could take even statements the Jews themselves have made and just quote them back. And that's enough to bring down the wrath of the system on your head.
Another issue, too, is, you know, we've got the social media now, just the system itself, you know, the propaganda. They're going after us for the propaganda issues. That's clear. Now, I'm not sure where your take is on this. I'll ask it then. No matter how hard they try, they're not going to ever put this thing back into the box. Pandora's box is now open. We agree or disagree on that point?
I don't know. I honestly, they historically, they've gotten a monopoly over media, and media in the broadest possible sense. I think of even the Bible as media. It was that day's form of communication and the common understanding of what's going on in the world, the worldview. Jews, that's one of the things that they realize, the critical importance of worldview, and they try to control not only their own tribe's worldview, but the worldview of everyone around them. And they lost control with the internet when the internet was first developed, and even before you and I became active in 2005 or so, for probably 10 years before that, when the internet first ballooned in popularity in 1995, people were on mail lists and other more primitive forms before the web really existed, exchanging information that had previously been consigned to, you know, flyers and leaflets and things distributed by hands. The internet has a wonderful empowering effect that it allows even people on a shoestring budget to get their opinions heard. And the way they have fought that up until now has been to just drown it out in a bunch of nonsense. It's plenty of people out there spouting all sorts of explanations for what's wrong with the world that have nothing to do with Jews. There's a lot of them are Jews that are basically just trying to run cover for their tribe. But that's failing, and it's been failing for the last several years. And so now they realize they have to basically wield some open power and take the matter into their own hands and shut it down. And so the ADL in the last 2 years, has taken an open leading role in defining who is allowed to speak and what they're allowed to say on social media.
Do you find this is somewhat of a, I mean, they've always been doing this. Okay. So they've always been doing this. So now do we have a little bit of an advantage because now they're so open about it to where before they were always subversive? Now it's quite in the open. Do we have an advantage in raising these issues more with the public?
We have an advantage. Yeah. But it's a window because they are quickly closing it. They've already banned the more open, explicit forms of dissidents from things like Twitter and Facebook. I don't think was ever really very open, but Twitter used to have a culture of free speech. You could say whatever you wanted and you wouldn't be banned up until around 2016, late 2015. And now the money, I don't deal with it, so I don't know exactly what's going on there, but these the credit card services and money services are all being shut down as well. I think basically what I'm saying is historically, my main point is historically they have gone after the nerve centers of communication because it's critical to their own survival. That's an existential threat to them, is if they don't have control, ultimately editorial control, over the current narrative and the historic narrative and people's view of the world. If they don't have that, then resistance can arise and focus on them and what they're doing. And they lost, or you know, I never really thought about why they allowed the internet to go free for so long. I think, like I said, they thought it would be sufficient to just drown it out in noise initially, the few people who were objecting to what they were doing and calling attention to them. They have a difficult position here, where in order to silence the growing awareness of what they're up to, they have to expose their power more. But they're doing it, and they will do it. And the ultimate endpoint to this is what happened in the Soviet Union, where once they got enough power, once it got critical enough, they just made the death penalty for anti-Semitism. And what is anti-Semitism? It's whatever Jews don't want you to say. It's whatever Jews don't want you doing.
It's how you look at them. I mean, you're looking at me suspiciously. I'm scared of this person. He's an anti-Semite, and away you go.
Yes. Yeah, and they call Donald Trump an anti-Semite.
It's
ridiculous.
Do you find a little bit of frustration? I do, with how many of our fellow countrymen and women just really don't grasp what has really become an open agenda against them and the rest of us.
It's infuriating. Yes, I'm very angry.
Yeah,
but as far as other people, I don't think that they are ignorant of it so much as they. This is where we get a bit into psychology, is how do people deal with unpleasant truths? They, and I don't want to Freudianize this, but basically you can see it yourself, how your friends and your family react when you give them the bad news about what's going on in the world and why. You know, they're curious. People want to know, why is this happening? What's going on? But they also kind of know. I mean, when I look back at my own awakening, I realized that a lot of stuff was right there in front of my face the whole time. I kind of knew what was going on. I just didn't know how to process it. I didn't want to process it. That's, I think, explains most of it, is really just people are afraid to confront the reality. And it's partly because they look around, they see nobody else is wanting to confront the reality. There's a tipping point kind of nature to these kind of, as I look back in history at various supposed, you know, quote unquote, anti-Semitic uprisings or pogroms, is there's a tipping point when people have been talking about what the Jews are doing, and it finally reaches, it finally blossoms into enough people, and they can see other people are also upset about the same thing, and then they rise up and they do something about it.
Which, to you, as you're saying, then they need to control that nerve center, media nerve center, to make sure that awareness doesn't rise. From the 212 area code, hi, you're on with Tan Stoffel.
Yeah, I find it rather odd how Jews would use the Bible.
I'm going to not take his call. He's always angry. He sees someone. So basically then, Tan, we have a situation now where you've been doing this a long time. I've been doing it a long time. We're not alone in this. The politicians have joined us in some cases. We see some of that happening in Europe, at least. Where's the West right now? Do you think we have any hope with this block, or is this country kind of wasted right now, America, the United States?
Yeah, good question. I don't know. I hold out hope that people will, if everyone realized what I realize and sees it the way I see it, and realize that so many other people do as well, then we could have real change, because the Jews are a physical minority. You look at the power that they wield, even as a physically small minority, it has to do with the fact that they act in concert, that they cover for each other, that they circle the wagons around each other. That's the secret of their power. And if white people, who vastly outnumber them, or just everybody who's not a Jew, were to at least not fight each other, not give in to the number one tactic that Jews use against non-Jews, which is to lets you and him fight. They stir up the divide and conquer. They stir up strife amongst us so that we fight each other rather than fighting the Jews, who are actually calling the shots and driving the agendas that everybody doesn't like.
Yeah. Was Charlottesville premature?
Was Charlottesville premature?
Yeah, premature.
No, I don't think it was. I think it's amazing that it took so long for white people to say, we want to go out and speak and test our government. They, you know, Jason Kessler, as I get it, and Eli Mosley, the two guys who organized that march in 2017, they sensed that our rights as whites were threatened, free speech in particular, free political expression. Everybody realizes that whites who speak up in a pro-white fashion in defense of whites in any capacity, even in a party, in a social setting, is immediately attacked. These guys put it to the test. They said, we're going to hold an open demonstration. We're going to do it by the book. We're going to get approval. And the entire local, state, federal regime came down on everyone who showed up. And other people have described, I think, well enough what happened. It exposed the true nature of our government. It is an illegitimate government. It does not follow its own stated principles and values. And that was exposed by Charlottesville. So I wish it had happened sooner.
Okay, very good. Ton Stoffel, everybody. H-of-treason. Actually, H-of-treason, but H of treason. You'll find it out there. Back with more. Oh, second half, right? Hey, welcome back. It's the Fetch. 2.5 hours into the show, everybody. Ton Stoffel from Age of Treason is joining us here. But before we get back to Ton, just want to say again, happy holidays, of course. You know, we got the holiday coming up, everybody. We're going to be broadcasting through the holidays, so don't worry about all that. Being here in the Middle East, I don't get to practice too much of the holidays. So I'm going to be here live through the whole season. So everybody out there that has just joined us, of course, welcome to Inside the Eye Live. And of course, Ton Stoffel, we saw you did advertise it a bit on your site, and we see a little bump in the numbers, so thanks a lot for that. Appreciate it. Again, welcome back.
I'm sure. I'm glad. I have a very small audience, I think, but I'm glad to bring it.
Well, we all never know who's listening, as they say. You know, sometimes it's eerie when you're saying things on this show for months and months, and all of a sudden the president comes out and says the exact same thing you've been saying. You got to wonder just who's listening sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with that. And ideas get around. But there have been times when I think I have some sort of influence on ideas, and I think something, but I don't write it down. I don't say it. And then I go online and I see other people having the same thoughts. And so it's a humbling experience that I've experienced more and more as I say less and less, to see that other people don't really need too many people like me around to say what is pretty much obvious. And there was a time when I thought that the reason I needed to speak was because nobody else was saying the things that I thought were important to say. And to the extent I still speak, that's when I speak, is when I think other people aren't covering something or seeing things from the way that I see it. And so I feel compelled then to speak up about it. But for the most part, I see lots and lots more activity than in years past. And so I feel less and less of a compulsion to have to speak up.
You and I swear, we're like kindred souls, man. I've been thinking the exact same thing, because we both from the same era, 2005. There was nobody doing what we were doing.
I think we're probably about the same age.
Yeah, we didn't know about us. You know, we didn't know about each other, but we're doing our thing, focused. And the next thing you know, 2005 comes along, and the next thing you know, bang! And it's everybody. It's like, boy, I don't need to be doing so much radio anymore. But people say, Fetch, no, your voice, you got to keep going. You got to. All right, fine. you know, I'm looking through your website here, and you talk a lot about what I talk about here, which is really bizarre. But when we look at Europe, Ton, we see at least some positives out of Europe, if we don't see it here. But really, Ton, it really boils down to something that people are really starting to get, and it's demographics, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the root of it, and immigration connected to that, because that's what threatens us. The falling birth rate wouldn't be as much of a threat if the borders were closed and our homelands weren't being occupied by colonizers whose birth rate is much higher.
We don't have policies that even encourage us to have higher birth rates, and we have an education system doing all it can to keep our couples divided. So it's a multi-pronged attack that we are facing here in the West, and there's really no easy solution.
Yeah,
apart from a massive purge. Of course, I'm all for purging. I'm ready to go Erdogan on this. He's gotten rid of 120,000 people. We need to look at what happened on 9/11 as a coup d'etat. We need to look at the voter fraud as a coup d'etat, not a crime. It's a coup d'etat. They are trying to take over our government through underhanded means, and we just start purging. Absolutely ruthlessly purge. I'm all for this right now because there's no easy, gradable solution that we can just go in steps. I'm all for a purge right now.
Yeah, well, it's the history is much longer. It goes back. Some people trace it back to the founding of the country, and of course, in Europe, it goes back farther than that. But just to point out a couple of obvious things, Wilson and World War One, the entry of the U.S. into World War One, the founding of the Fed, Roosevelt and the entry of the U.S. into World War Two. These are things that already showed signs of Jewish control basically over our foreign policy. In the 1960s, they finally got more or less complete control over domestic social policies with civil rights and all of that. And immigration. Yeah.
So to me, since there's no easy solution, then you got to just go full Erdogan.
You need awareness first. You need to basically spread the awareness. People feel instinctively that something's wrong. They need to be confronted with the reality of what it is that's wrong and forced one way or another to take sides, to acknowledge what's happening. And, One of the negative things, I think, is Trump. Trump has exposed there's good and there's bad. Of course, it's exposed the fact that there is a tremendous dissatisfaction with the way things have been going. Not really a new thing either. I mean, people knew it with Nixon and the silent majority. People knew it with Reagan and the Bushes. Trump has really exposed it more directly as a white thing, even though he won't speak. And this is where the downside comes in. He won't speak actually in defense of white people. He won't speak in favor of his own supporters. And the reason his supporters are so viciously attacked is because they're white. The Jewish media doesn't like them for that reason. And the non-whites on the streets and Antifa attack Trump supporters because they're white, not because they support Trump. And Trump does not defend them. And so what's disappointing to me, what's very demoralizing, is to see people who supposed white leaders, supposedly racially aware and supposedly even Jew aware, who have been cheering for Trump. And it's starting to turn now. They're starting to realize that was a mistake. A lot of them won't acknowledge that it was a mistake. They're just saying, oh, well, we gave him a chance. And so now we have to give up on him. But they never should have trusted him from the beginning.
Well, they really didn't have a choice. Hillary was certainly much worse. I mean, to me, I started to characterize this as a battle between really two Jewish sects. The nationalist Jewish sect, which is a little bit more rational than the pure demonic Jewish sect, which is impossible to work with and is just impossible. So really right now we had to take the best of what we had, but at least now we know it's a Jewish construction here. And as you say, getting the awareness out, that's the challenge.
It's politics. American politics is a false dichotomy. It's you have to choose between the lesser of two evils, and they're both
evil. Yeah, lesser of two Jewish groups. Yes.
Right. And it's two faces for one pro-Jewish party, one anti-white pro-Jewish party. Yes. One party's more anti-white, the Democrats or the liberals, leftists are more anti-white, and the other party is increasingly more and more pro-Jew. But they both have both parts baked into them and are both funded primarily by Jews. And they both pretty much openly serve Jewish interests.
Now, again, putting this back into perspective, 2005, okay, to 2005, we've had Ann Coulter come out basically saying, look, the left, the Democrats, is basically an anti-white party. She's now openly saying this, declaring it openly. You have someone like a Tucker Carlson hammering around the talking points all the time now. Do we need, obviously we need more, but is this, obviously it's a plus in my opinion, but do you see that this type of thing is going to increase more in your opinion? It's
yes.
Just conjecture.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to increase. When it comes to people like Tucker and especially Coulter, I think what took them so long, it's pretty obvious that the system is anti-white. As far back as, I think it was 2007, you know, even though I started blogging in 2005 because I didn't like what was going on, I still saw it through a political left-right lens. And it wasn't until late 2007 that I saw what's going on, for instance, in much larger scale now with this Gilets Jaunes movement in France. Was happening. I was paying attention to it because I was upset about Muslims coming into Europe. That's a whole nother story. But basically, I think my instincts were right there that I was paying attention to that. I saw Belgian photos and video of Belgian nationalists being manhandled by white police, and that's when the cord snapped in my head, and I thought, this is a racial thing. This is this political correctness and multiculturalism, diversity, equals white extinction, is I think what I titled it. And that's when the awareness of myself as a white man with a duty and a responsibility, whether I wanted it or not, because of how I was born, to do something and just at least speak up about it. And it was about 2 weeks later that the other coin dropped of, this is the Jews. This has to do with the Jews. And I'm going to also come out against that. So
when did this happen?
Why or when?
No, when.
This is late 2007.
Oh, wow. About the same time.
Yeah. So, but anyway, my point when it comes to people like Tucker and Coulter is they have a lot to lose in that their income is tied to basically having access to the Jewish media. And so they're limited in what they can say. But it's like with Trump. I don't think that Trump limits what he says or limits what he does because he's really on our side but is afraid to challenge the Jews. I think he's made his decision. He's with the Jews. He knows he needs the votes of whites to get the power that he wants. And I think Coulter, there's a similar equation in her head of she knows that her audience, the people who buy her books and listen to her interviews, are white people. And she has that instinct as a white person. And she's been censoring herself for years. And so now she's letting a little bit of it go, letting a little bit of it slip. But there's more to come. There are more people who are going to be more honestly outspoken, run for political power, political office. I think of people like Patrick Little, yes, yes. And other figures like that who think what we think, who will say what we say openly and run for office and put white people to the test to actually vote for them and vote them into power. And
now, Tom, I've always said that our role, because we're not in a position of power, you know what I mean? We're bootstrap type of bloggers, bootstrap media type of people, right? For the most part. But really our role, because there is a team play, you know, we all have to kind of like circle our wagons, but our role really is to create political space. I've always said that about what we're doing. Create the political space so that more and more people can expand this envelope. Have you taken that approach to your work?
Yes. I consciously think that I say out loud, either on podcasts or in blog posts, what I think, first of all. And I think it's important that somebody does that, because other people think things like this, but it's maybe less clear in their minds. They don't focus as much energy on trying to get at, you know, what the real root of the things that they're upset about are. But when they hear other people talk about it, it emboldens them. It gives them courage to then start speaking out loud that way themselves. And that's the first step toward organizing any sort of response to the wrongs that are being done. So if you don't like what's happening, the first thing you have to do is think about it and think clearly about it. And then you need at least some people to be speaking clearly about it. And then you need leaders who think and speak clearly to lead the larger group of people in the fight. And it is a fight. It's an existential battle. It's a war, really. And a lot of people don't, they may mouth that word or think in those terms, but they don't really think all the way in those terms. They don't take them, their own rhetoric seriously. And they're more in this as a diversion or just something to do, entertainment or selling books or whatever it is that they're, you know, that's not what I'm about. It's, I am doing what, like, as you described it, creating political space just in my own small way. I don't have any ambitions to be a leader or be in charge of a large organization or anything, or even encourage people to join such things or encourage people on strategy, tell people what they should be doing or shouldn't be doing. I'm basically just stating truths. It's a very small ambition that I have.
Now, people like in the business, have you had anything work with people like the Red Ice people?
I had an interview with Henrik Palmgren a couple of years ago. Yeah, when the Trump stuff was all just starting.
Yeah, because I'll tell you, you know, the movement has changed so much, you know, from those days, you know, and all of a sudden Henrik and these people, they become, but, you know, they, you know, I mean, a lot of criticism out there because they seem like semi-censored equally. But I know that for the most part, they're working really hard. You've got a lot of people working hard. And then in the United States, it doesn't seem to be transpiring so much, although it seems like a lot of Trump's followers are just on the cusp of following what we've been saying for literally a decade now. You find that?
Yes. First of all, I don't think it's one movement. It's more like several different streams. I've been following for a long time the popular streams, that what I see as the instinctive expressions, like Gilets Jaunes or before that, the Tea Party and alt-right that's kind of developed out of the Tea Party. And people will bristle, I think, at even seeing a connection between those things, but they are connected. It's basically just white people trying to do something in their own political interest, trying to rebel against what they see as a system that's out of control, that they've lost say in.
Now, relative to France, I see you've been covering a little bit about France. I put forward the idea that the French really don't understand it. Actually, I shouldn't say they don't understand, but what they should understand is that they've gone too far now. They're either going to have to overthrow this government and start real change in their society, or they're going to get hammered down the road, because what the French aristocracy is going to do to them is destroy them. They will never allow this to happen again.
See that? It's hard to tell because we are divided by a language. And so the French people don't see everything that's going on, although I think they see more of what's going on in the Anglophone world than English speakers see of their world. And that's one of the tragedies of European history is that we are divided by so many different languages and we don't see the commonality between us. And so I won't judge what they know or don't know or how seriously they take things. They're out in the streets demonstrating, whereas in the U.S., the Tea Party did something similar, but was a lot less serious about it as far as understanding what the cause was and being violent about it. The people in France are obviously upset, but it is incoherent. They're divided about what it is they're upset about. They just know that they don't like what's going on. And so people, for all their different reasons, are coming out into the streets. The regime knows what the priorities are, and the regime uses the violence against the Yellow Vests because they recognize that it's a white uprising. The media is not sympathetic to them because they realize it's a white uprising.
Did you see they tried to burn down the media center last Saturday?
Yeah, good. And in the U.S., that's similar to how, you know, Trump taps into this enemy of the people thing and tries to direct the anger of his base at the media, rightly so. And people instinctively don't like the media. They don't trust the media. But what they most of them still won't do, hesitate to do, is attribute it to Jews and see that it's Jews that control our media. But, you know, basically, if you don't like what's going on in the media and the banking, some media money, academia, business, if you don't like any of those things, you don't like the Jews. You just probably don't know it yet or don't have the courage to say it.
A lot of problems, too, Ton, is that too many people, they are looking at what Jews produce for them and not paying enough attention to what Jews are saying behind all this glitz. We should focus more on the Jewish media itself and really start to listen to what these Jews are saying, and they're not going to like what they hear.
Yeah, well, that's it reminds me of an issue where people they tend to put Jews on a pedestal as critics. I'm not expressing myself very well, but they once they wake up to there being a Jewish problem, it's like with the Tea Party putting blacks out in front of their, you know, to prove that they're not racist. A lot of people will say, well, I don't like what the Jews are doing. Let me find some good Jew that's saying something critical. I did this myself when I gravitated toward Lawrence Oster but I broke the gatekeeper there. I broke past the gate that he was trying to set up. But this is a recurring theme that Jews try to get out in front of criticism. They try to put out it's almost an inoculative thing in the same way that vaccines work. They put out a sort of lame resistance to Jewing. I call it alt-Jewing. And they kind of de-Jew the problem, or at least minimize it, whatever, in hopes to, and they do catch lots of white people who are upset about what's going on and slow them down and stymie a real resistance from forming. Mm. But you do need to listen to what the Jews are saying, because that's where they speak clearest about what they're doing, is to each other. And listening to reading the Jewish media has that value to it.
Yes. So when Jews talk openly that what's happening in Corbyn is an existential threat to Jewish life in Britain, why, if they can speak openly like this, why should we, the people, you and I agree, I already know, just kind of talking to the audience, that why should you not be then going out and saying, hey, Jewish life is an existential threat to us?
Yeah. I'm disappointed with liberals in the literal sense of that word liberal, the classic liberals, the right wingers call it, that they don't uphold their own stated values more. But I understand why. I mean, they won't confront the Jews. Liberalism is supposed to be about a system of government that doesn't favor any one particular group or religion or way of life even. And it's all about individual rights and so forth, and things like free speech and so forth, liberal freedoms. Yet the people who profess those beliefs look straight at Jews Jewing openly in favor of their own kind and ignore it and speak. Instead, they condemn whites and condemn white nationalism and condemn racism, condemn white supremacy. When Jews are providing if you want to look at, you know, what they call racism, or the way most of these conservatives and classical liberals describe as racism, how they misinterpret it. Just look at the Jews. They're the best example of it. If you want supremacism, an example of supremacism or white nationalism, assuming you think Jews are white, there's Zionism, you know, but they don't. It must create cognitive dissonance in their head to see these things. Donald Trump has brought that to a head too, this condemnation, this open condemnation of white nationalism, as if Donald Trump is the leader of a white nationalist movement, when in reality, he's the most subservient to Jews president that there has ever been. He's the most openly bootlicking president ever.
Yes, pretty much.
It demonstrates a point that I've made over and over, besides this anti-white pro-Jew regime. I've pointed out that Jews are not white. They're the political opposite of white. You can argue about the biology of them being Caucasian or looking white,
and all of that. But when push comes to shove, politically speaking, whites and Jews are complete opposites. There, you can't find a more opposite pair of groups. If you take a statement about whites that is considered politically incorrect, like it's okay to be white, and just plug Jew in for white, now it's politically incorrect to criticize that statement. It's okay to Jew, to be a Jew. That's what I'm talking about. It's the political, legal, media, people who wield real power in our society have, they obviously treat whites and Jews as complete opposites.
And a lot of the, really a lot of the problem comes from people just losing their roots, Ton. I mean, my mother would tell me if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander, and we're not going to move off of that point. So if it's good for you, it's good for me. Now get out of my face. But nobody seems to have this common sense anymore here in the West. It's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, well, that's to the point that about liberals not upholding their own values, even deracinated universalist values they don't uphold. When the Jews set up a giant menorah on the White House lawn, they don't object to it.
And they don't even know the symbolism that this is saying, we conquered you, man. That's what's really maddening, is that people don't understand the symbolic meaning behind virtually everything Jews do. Everything has a symbolic meaning to it. And all of it's political. It's not religious. Or we could just say that Judaism is a political doctrine hell-bent on global domination.
Yes. Like what they say, some of the ones who are critical of Islam. Yes, everything that those critics, the Jewish critics of Islam, say, it applies as much or more to Jews.
So we got about 1 minute to go, Tom. What do you got planned for the next holiday or something? You got something cool planned? You're going to be relaxed, family? What you going to be doing?
Just relaxing. I don't have anything special going on. I have an ongoing project I call T-Feed, where I put radio shows that I'm interested in. I think it's been good, and I'm going to keep doing that.
Very cool. Send me the information. We'll help get it out more. And that's Ton Stoffel, everybody. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right. Talk soon. That's the show, everybody. Thanks again. Good night and beyond. Good afternoon, everybody. See you all Thursday for Inside the LI Primetime, 6 o'clock p.m. Good night.